Hello, this is Robert Stark. I am joined here today with Charles Lincoln and Todd Overcash.
Hey, how you doing, Robert?
Good.
I'd like to introduce Dr. William Todd Overcash. Do you want us on the visual or just on voice?
Audio is fine. We're on audio right now.
All right.
And everyone, I think most of the audience is familiar with you, Charles, but I'll let you introduce Todd Overcash.
All right. I'm here in Ocala, Florida. Dr. William Todd Overcash, MD of Ocala and Marion County, has one of these amazing, totally infamous varieties of modern divorce, marital dissolution, and child custody proceedings that started 12 years ago and shows no sign of ending. This is a new kind of judicial nightmare. It didn't exist back in the bad old days of divorce for fault, back in the supposedly, pre-no-fault divorce days. Divorces were so shameful and so embarrassing that when they happened, they basically would come in and out of court fairly quickly. But now that it's no fault, the lawyers can basically make lifetime careers out of milking people, in essence.
And
Or
Charles, can you explain the fundamental differences in the law between no-fault divorce and the way divorce worked before that?
oh well, I mean that's almost a topic in and of itself. But basically, the idea was that was the idea used to be that you had to prove certain kinds of very specific fault in order to get a divorce. And the rule now is that anyone can get a divorce who asks for one. But the problem right now is Todd is sitting here with me, showing me a cashier's check from, oh, let's see, it's dated. What's the date here? May 6th of last year. May 6th of last year, he paid his wife's attorney the sum of $24,278.02. I also have a recent order that is going to hearing. Is that for this Friday?
Next, no, it's coming in
In July?
July.
Okay, he's facing contempt charges for not having paid the exact same amount.
So
And
just for the audience, if they're not familiar with contempt charges, are these civil or criminal?
it is treated as a criminal in this case because he was ordered to pay it in the past and he has not paid it. Okay, Todd wants to talk, and this
Hey, Todd.
the big question that everyone has for Todd is, you've been going at this now for 6 years past the end of the dissolution. Why didn't you just give up?
Now, let me just give you a little history. I married my wife. She told me she wanted to have children. She had had her tubes tied without ever having had a child, which is against the law. Tried to undo it, did not work, went through test tube, lost one child, went through a in vitro or test tube again and had our successful daughter. At 6 months of age, she hit me with a divorce. And her intent was to just really use the child as a weapon. And we went through about a 6 year custody battle. And during that time, I had 50-50 custody of my daughter. I had to go to court to get my daughter in preschool, speech therapy evaluation, speech therapy, my mother's funeral. I went through my daughter being molested by one of her boyfriends and having to go through an exam, my daughter go through exam at the state of Florida.
How old was she then?
She was 4 years old and the boyfriend had a criminal record. It was a sealed case in New Jersey, but the police gave it to me where he was in his 20s and had raped a 14-year-old. They did not arrest him because could not prove penetration. I had to go to court to take her to a father-daughter dance that did not follow my time. My daughter has a very high IQ, about 133. She wanted to go to what we would call magnet schools here, which are the better schools in the area. My wife took me to court to block her from going to magnet schools. My daughter has crossbite of her teeth, which is damaging to her teeth long term. If you don't fix it prior to 13, you have to have jaw surgery. She took me to court to block treatment of her crossbite. My daughter has kyphosis, which is curvature of your back of 50 degrees. And the standard of care is to start an exercise program, physical therapy, and possibly a brace. And it's familial on my wife's side. She took me to court to block that. And it has just gone on and on and on. And now we are facing what is truly called parental alienation, because basically she's told my daughter, one, I'm not a Christian, which I am. Two, that grades do not matter. As long as you go to school and make C's, that's all I care about. And as I tell my daughter, if the best you can do is a C, I will applaud you. But if you're not studying and applying yourself, then that's not acceptable. My daughter was in competition to ride championship jumpers, and her goal was to be a veterinarian, rescue horses, and ride in the Olympics. And my wife blocked her from riding horses. And it is just an amazing feat of what goes on here.
And they accused you at one point of child abuse for taking your daughter's diving, I believe, right?
Yes, I was told on the record that I was a child abuser for getting my daughter certified. I met all the laws, all the requirements with the instructor, met all the national guidelines, and she wanted to become a junior certified scuba diver. And I was taken to court and accused of being a child abuser for getting my daughter certified as a scuba diver.
And what was there a, and did the, your ex-wife, did she succeed in getting those charges, or did she fail?
She failed at those, but what she has achieved is she has achieved, I actually talked to Cincinnati Children's Hospital, which has a program that trains people nationally and internationally about medical neglect and child abuse of children. I talked to the director of the program, and I went through this, and I said, am I missing something here? I know I'm a father. I have been very involved in my daughter's life 50-50. And he said, Todd, you know, basically this is medical neglect and child abuse, and the family counseling centers do not recognize that this occurs. And it really is very hard. My daughter actually won the world championship in ballroom dancing in 2008. And after she won it, her mother failed to place, and her mother convinced her that dancing was bad and no longer to dance. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, is this about us or about our daughter's well-being and achieving what she should do? And basically,
from a strictly personal standpoint, I mean, one thing that sounds to me like is that everything that gives your daughter pleasure, your ex-wife wants to take away from her, and because she associates these things with you. Now, is that sort of your read on it, on a personal level?
It is. I mean, we've actually had to go to court and have it ordered that my daughter had to have a phone to be able to contact me.
But at this point, you have no contact with your daughter, is that correct?
I have no contact with my daughter at this time.
And how long has it been since you had regular contact with her?
It's been a little over a year.
And what is the worst thing that anyone has ever proven that you've done to your daughter?
The worst thing they've ever proven that I did to my daughter was the fact that I had told her that she needed to study and prepare herself. And when she flunked two exams, she came to me and said, Daddy, I need help. Will you help me study for the retakes? And we did. And we're not talking about a college student studying. We're talking about a young child.
You know, middle school, right?
Yes. And you take it easy. You don't study. You study a little 15, 20 minutes, take a few hours break, come back. She retook the test and made two A's and said, Dad, you're right. I can make A's. I don't know why my mama tells me this. And the next thing I know, my daughter is blocked from showing at hits.
That's a horse.
Which is a horse championship show, a equestrian event in Florida. And next thing I know, as my daughter told me, Daddy, Mama's the boss, and I have to keep her happy, and I'm sorry.
So literally the worst thing you've done to your daughter is you've tried to make her realize herself in every potential she's got.
It is. I mean, at the end of her third grade, the teacher said, Todd, she has problems with math. She went into the fourth grade. The teacher recognized it. I had her tested appropriately by the Sylvan Learning Center. I had the Stanford tests on her. I offered tutors. Her mother said, we will not do tutors. You do what you want, I'll do what I want, instead of a coordinated effort. I donated a computer math program to the private school to help children either advance or catch up. And I was criticized and attacked in the court of law for doing that.
Now, you have, as I understand it, your main theory about what's going on right now is that you're being discriminated against because you were a father. Is that correct?
I think one is because I'm a father. I think the second thing is because, you know, the truth of the matter is that Lori and I have both been through psychological testing. I'm normal, whatever that means. And my ex-wife is a borderline personality with schizoid traits, and her maternal grandfather committed suicide because he was paranoid schizophrenic at 52. And the third thing is I have exposed illegal activity in the community.
Aha. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because that's pretty interesting.
Under the law, I'm required to report certain things.
Under the law relating to your status as a licensed doctor.
As a licensed doctor, I'm required to report certain things. For instance, my wife refused to give my daughter antibiotics for strep throat that the doctor had prescribed. My wife felt like she was getting better, didn't need to finish them. She rebounded and had to have intramuscular shots to avoid that. And I, by law, even though I'm her father, I'm required to report that to DCF. I then found out that my ex-wife filed a DCF report saying
DCF is the Florida Department of Children and Families, correct?
Right. That I was buying fertilizer to build bombs with, and the fertilizer was actually for 130 orange trees that I own. But then what really happened is I discovered that a sitting judge was doctor shopping and getting 30 times a daily allowance of a class 2 drug. And I reported it to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and they told me, you've just cut your throat. Somebody's going to hurt you one way or the other. And next thing I knew, I come under attack. And you can actually go on the internet and look up Ocala, a horse called Sassy. And 5 days after I reported the judge, the horse was attacked with corrosive material and suffered a 23% body burn, and I was called and warned I need to back off or more would continue. And I reported this to the feds, and next thing I know, I'm told judges have immunity. There's nothing they can do. And next thing I know, I get attacked dealing with my daughter in every way known to man. It has just really amazed me that I follow the law, I obey the law, and I get attacked.
Is this one particular judge, or is it just the court and system in general?
Well, in Florida, the Marion County court system is known as being very, very corrupt. For instance, he's now a retired judge, but he sits as a senior judge. He is known to be a drunk and has actually had multiple DUIs, and he is escorted home every Wednesday night from the Elks Club by police, but he's drunk, and he's actually been arrested and held at the jail without charges, pending release.
I take it this is all a matter of public record. You're not slandering.
It's public records. It's a matter of public record.
And which judge is this?
I'd rather leave his name out of this,
okay, but the one who was abusing drugs, that was Judge Swiger.
It was.
So is there a particular particular judge who is biased? You're saying is biased against fathers or men?
In Marion County, where we are, they're absolutely biased against men. And as a general rule, what's happened, and Marion, I'll give you an example. back in 2011, I believe it was 11, maybe it was 12, the state of Florida passed custody law, changing it to where you can no longer declare a primary custodial parent. You had to call it joint custodial. Marion County Courthouse continued to pass out pre-printed forms to people who were coming in to file their own divorce paper, where that you had to declare a primary custodial parent versus a non-custodial parent. And when I pointed out to them that was in violation of state law as passed, and I gave them the statute, I was reprimanded verbally by administration of the courthouse.
Well, you know, you have an interesting relationship for the past 2.5 years since Judge Swigert was recused from your case by an order of an appellate court with Judge Barbara Garola, and she's the judge you're currently in front of. And you have said that you think that she's particularly discriminating against you as a man. Is that correct?
It is.
Okay. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Because I think that it's very interesting, and I just want to hear your perspective on that.
This is a bit of a complex story, and I probably am covering more than what I should cover, but there was a physician in Ocala who practiced medicine on a forged license. They had never passed the licensing exam. And I'm the one who reported her to the FDA, the Federal Food and Drug Administration, and the federal agencies rolled in. Well, her brother is a sitting judge on the Fifth Appellate, and his best friend was Judge Swigert, who I also reported for his doctor shopping. And Judge Swigert was the judge who was hearing all the cases of Judge Garola's stepson, who had 22 criminal activities, 7 felonies that included armed robbery of a store and transport of 2 kilos of cocaine, and never served one day in jail. And I actually treated his wife for abuse and filed a medical record in her custody battle with her son. And this judge has involved herself in this case. And interestingly enough about this judge, there was actually a fish and wildlife officer, highly decorated, whose wife had become addicted to certain pain medications. It's all public news, all over TV. And she kept falling down. He was trying to get her help. And one day she fell and got hurt. And he was arrested for, quote, abuse, even though the doctors signed affidavit, even though his wife signed affidavits that he had not done anything. Judge Garola demanded that as a man, he had abused his wife and must stand trial. And he stood trial before a jury and was found innocent. And when they demanded penalties to be paid back to them for cost of attorney's fees and all that, Garola issued an order telling them they weren't entitled. And he actually lost. He is now a deputy in Groveland, Florida, a senior deputy.
So basically, you told me once that you feel that Judge Barbara Garola has this issue with men based on her son, and that she somehow transfers this to you. Is that correct?
I do. I think that her stepson she couldn't do anything with, and she transfers that to men who come before her. And I've heard that from other attorneys around the state who have dealt with her in the past. I actually had Attorney Portwood in Inverness, Florida, tell me that if Judge Garola had not retired and remained on the family bench, she would have quit being a family attorney in Inverness because of her bias against men.
Have you tried to get Judge Garola off your case?
I have tried multiple times.
And that's permitted under Florida law, correct?
It is.
What's your analysis on why it is that Judge Garola, after 2.5 years and 6 or 7 motions on your part to recuse, is still on your case?
Well, I believe that this is called payback to me because I have exposed an appellate judge's sister for practicing medicine on a forged license. I exposed a sitting judge for buying drugs and doctor shopping, and I have also exposed a few other activities that, you know, we haven't discussed. But, and because I opposed my daughter staying in a, what I call a less than high quality college, not college, a Christian school. She wanted to go to an appellate school. I mean, a magnet school. She wanted to go to a magnet school and not be in a Christian school anymore because she said, Dad, I go to church all the time. Why can't I go to regular school and advance? Because they have things that they don't have where I'm at. Because the schools here are very poor in Florida. As everybody knows, we have some of the worst schools around. And I supported her in that endeavor. And the problem of it is Judge Swigert failed to recuse himself when we discovered his wife had been an employee of the school my daughter attended, and his children had attended that school. And when we discovered that, and he had made some rulings without motions before him, we demanded his recusal. And under Florida law, they have to say something, and after 30 days, if they don't say anything, they're recused. And 36 days went by, we said, you're gone. My attorneys did, and he said, no, I'm not. Went to the senior judge here, which is Judge Eddie, and Judge Eddie said, no, I stand by him. He stays. We took it to the appellate, and it was ruled on by judges, and they sat on it for almost 1 year, even though it was clear there are rulings across the state at the appellate level that if a judge is asked to recuse and makes no comments within 30 days, he's automatically gone, and they sat on it, and during that almost 1 year, Judge Swigert attacked me so vehemently, it was incredible. I mean, I'm an American citizen. My ex-wife is an American citizen. My daughter is an American citizen. I had to go to court to get a passport for my daughter because she was wanting to travel. He ordered the passport. My ex-wife refused, put her on the watch list. We went back to court. He ordered her to have it done in 10 days. I couldn't prove she was off the watch list because even though I'm my daughter's father and I have 50-50 custody, the federal government refused to tell me whether my daughter was on the watch list or not because the only person they could tell that to is one who put them on the watch list. And Lord refused.
What watch list specifically?
Huh?
What watch list specifically?
The federal government has a watch list that if you as a parent think your child may be abducted, you can put them on a watch list. If that child is seen going into an international airport, then the child and whoever the child is with is immediately arrested on sight. And my ex-wife had put my daughter on the watch list, even though the judge had ordered her not to do that. So then,
finally, and can you try to have you tried to sue your ex-wife or press charges over putting you on the watch list?
Well, that's an ongoing issue that we're going to discuss. But the bottom line is we got her off the watch list. We went to the Bahamas. And when I arrived back, I was immediately condemned by the judge for going out of the country and not giving my wife more than a 48-hour notice, even though my daughter was with me for the next week. And I'd given her notice because I didn't get confirmation that my daughter even got a passport for 48 hours because it was a battle. And on top of that, this is the thing that really got me with Judge Swigert, is he violated the law in the sense that he told me prior to leaving the United States, each and every country I entered, I had to sign a waiver of extradition and hand that to the court prior to going to any country. Number one, there's only one country in the world that you can sign a waiver of extradition prior to entering the country, and that's the United States of America, and I have attorneys who have dealt with this issue before Geneva Convention courts and says that's true. Second thing is the judge forbid me from going to America, the American Samoa or Guam, which is United States territory, because my ex-wife said that one time I had been offered a job in Guam. So therefore, he banned me from traveling to Guam, which is United States territory. And that's what led to the judge having to leave this case, because there was clear violation of federal law.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me that so much is going on beyond just discrimination against you as a father. I mean, I know that you feel the injury most acutely as a father, because you love your daughter, you want to be with your daughter. But really, I think that it goes so far beyond that. Everything that you've just been describing, especially with Judge Swigert, but also with Judge Girolo, it seems to me that it's reflective not just of men versus women, it's reflective of a desire to destroy a certain lifestyle. I mean, you, to me, represent sort of a very traditional, we've used this phrase before, WASPy, white Anglo-Saxon tradition of culture and life. And, you know, your daughter being an equestrian and your desire for travel of everything. This is a certain lifestyle that I think is that somehow it's offensive to the courts that you want to maintain this lifestyle and you want to pass it on to your daughter.
Well, the interesting thing is I am a licensed physician. I used to do I've done about 7,000 bariatric procedures. I've done tons of obese surgery, but I underwent brain surgery for what's supposed to be a terminal disease, and it turned out that it was not terminal disease, and I have survived. But what is very interesting is because of that, because of some functions with my hands and all that, I'm not able to do surgery anymore. I actually had the judge look at me and tell me that I had no right to draw my disability and I needed to return to work. And I looked at her, I said, and she looked at me, she said, well, you're drawing your private disability you paid for. You're not drawing disability from the federal government. Therefore, it doesn't grant you the same rights. And under Florida and federal law, disability payments are disability regardless, and disability income is untouchable under the court of law. And I've actually had that confirmed. And this judge has actually gone on the record and has told me I have no right to feed my animals, pay my property taxes, pay my attorneys, prior to paying my ex-wife's attorneys, despite the fact that I've been divorced now for over 8 years. My ex-wife has the ability to make the same amount of money I do and has remarried, and he has income. And his income is his and contributes nothing to household expenses.
So are you just paying child support, or are you also paying alimony?
No alimony. No, I didn't have to pay alimony, but the bottom line, I had to pay all attorney's fees.
In effect, the amount of attorney's fees you're paying is far in excess of what alimony or child support would be. And there's another aspect of this that we haven't gone into, which is that at the present time, you're not paying child support because your parental rights have been terminated, right?
They terminated my parental rights, and this is very interesting because what they did was they accused me over my daughter's grades and telling her to study that I had emotionally abused my daughter, and they wanted me to undergo a psychological eval, which I did, and the psychologist stated, don't take this the wrong way, that I'm normal, reviewed my ex-wife's psychological records from the past, and stated that this was classic parental alienation. The child needed to be immediately removed from the mother and enjoined with me, and the judge said, I do not accept this evaluation. I refuse to put it on the record.
Even though it was a court-ordered evaluation?
Even though it was a court-ordered evaluation.
And so basically the court ordered evaluation determined that you should be the custodial parent, and instead Judge Girolo, the attorney Mark Shelnut, and your wife came back and basically forced you to give up your parental rights.
Basically, they told me, we're going to keep hitting you with attorney's fees and this fee and that fee, and every time you don't pay this, that, and the other, you're going to go to jail.
And I think an important thing to point out is this is the family... family law and family court system. So unlike other courts, there's definitely no due process.
Absolutely. And in fact, if you look,
There's actually, I mean, this has nothing to do with what's here yet, but there's a massive RICO lawsuit going on in San Diego court over exactly the same issue occurring there.
Well, we probably can't talk about that because this show is broadcasting out of California, and we can't discuss California cases on California radio.
So there is a, I mean, I wasn't familiar with this until now, but this show's in California. In California, the law says that you can't discuss legal cases in California.
Wow, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Anyhow, no, we can discuss Florida. We just can't discuss California legal cases.
Anyhow, but the point is, it is a nationwide problem, and I think that, I have yet to talk to an expert in family law or in domestic relations or in familial relations who would deny that basically the family system is in terrible crisis. The family courts are the absolute worst courts in North America. And I believe that the purpose is to tear society apart.
Charles, I got this thing you sent me about our show's topic, and you say family court system is a tool of economic sabotage, destruction, and genocide. Genocide. Those are some pretty hardcore allegations.
Well, I mean, I
well, let's. I'll give you an example of how I consider this genocide, or how serious this is. First of all, what ends up happening is, in a scenario like me, you run me to the point of bankruptcy, loss of business, and loss of income. If you take a look right now, and you do an internet search on the number of fathers in this country, about 1 in 6 men, now, not all men stand up for their custodial rights. Not all men are good parents, but not all women are good mothers or good parents. The bottom line of it is the fathers who fight to maintain their custodial rights, 90% of them lose, and 1 out of 6 end up committing suicide because the courts have hit them so hard that you will either die in jail for standing up for your constitutional rights, or, you push a people to the point that they cannot survive. And then you take a look at the other issue that occurs, and this is what people need to look at very carefully. This, in a traditional family, the mother is the loving, tender, gentle one, and the father tends to be the disciplinarian, and it gives a child a balanced perspective of life and balance. And if you look today at the number of children who are being raised without both parents, and you look at the premature pregnancy rate in children, the high mortality and death rates of children, and the complications and the risk of drug usage, these cases are the classic event that occurs in these cases. And I will tell you that Dr. Brody, who's a forensic psychologist, Dr. Crum, who's a forensic psychologist, and I can name about 4 more that are nationally known, that they will tell you that when children go through these events like my daughter has gone through, when you allow a woman who is a borderline personality to manipulate the system like this, statistically, a child like mine, there's a 75% chance of her being pregnant prior to the age of 16, 90% chance of her being involved in drugs, alcohol, drugs, or some format, and there's a 75% chance that she will never graduate high school. That's the statistics. So do I call that genocide? I do, in a way. I think that's ridiculous.
With the genocide thing, is it, would you say it's just corruption, or do you think there's a clear ideological agenda behind it?
Well, I think if you take a look at recent federal raids. Sometimes the feds are starting to wake up, but they're not prepared to make a move, and I'm not a supporter of the feds' activities totally. But they raided a courthouse in Pennsylvania. They raided a courthouse in Illinois. And if you look at Judge Posner in the 11th appellate for the federal court, he ruled that this idea of DCF, or, Child Protective Services, coming in and taking children away from families. There is a backdoor feedback of money to the courts and to the DCF agencies, and it's almost an exchange of trade of money, and he's actually slashed the immunity for that agency in the appellate court. The bottom line of it is they get paid for intervention in children, which I find incredible. I mean, I understand if children are truly endangered, I can respect that. But there is an obscene amount. And I will give you an example of something that I just learned last week about Judge Girola. There was a woman who was arrested and convicted and placed in jail for drug usage and, you know, under the table activities. Her ex-husband or partner had custody of the children for 3 years, and they were doing very well. Glowing remarks by the church, by the DCF people and everything else. And she got out of jail, was quote clean, did not have a job, was drawing state fund money or federal funds, and Judge Girola instantly reverted custody back to her from the father.
And that would be a clear case of sexual discrimination, but it is interesting that to the degree that the feds are involved in this, the primary statutory basis for all family law right now in the United States is Title 42, the Public Health and Welfare Code of the United States. Everything that the family courts do in the state is controlled and regulated by the standards of the welfare program in the United States. And so, I mean, in answer to your question, Robert, it's very clearly statutory in a sense, because even though domestic relations, family, most lawyers will tell you it's a matter of state law rather than federal law, that's a myth, and that's a misrepresentation of the reality today. The reality today is that all of the family code is subordinate to the federal welfare code, and every change that is made in the welfare code has to be evaluated by the state legislatures around the country and adjusted to correspond. Judge Posner, by the way, he's Seventh Circuit Chicago, not 11th Circuit.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
He was a professor of mine in law school, what can I say? Anyhow, it is true that there's a widespread recognition of the degree to which the welfare program has, in effect, perverted the family codes of the states. But in terms of day-to-day functioning, I think Todd would agree that the power of family judges to act outside of the law is almost beyond challenge. And it was specifically chosen to give these judges that kind of power so that they could unravel the social and economic fabric of society in a way that is very close to what the United Nations Treaty on Genocide is designed to prevent, which is the destruction of life, ways, and traditions.
Yeah, basically what the traditional, when most people think of genocide, they think of rounding up a bunch of people and murdering them. But what the UN Treaty on Genocide says is if you implement policies that make it difficult for a group, like to say start families, that they actually classify that as a form of genocide.
The third category of genocide, and of course it's much more it's much more subtle, and it doesn't make the news. And of course, if we wrap it all up in the framework of welfare, it fits so well, because what is destroying Dr. Overcash right now are these repeated demands for money. How much would you say, Todd, that you've paid since your divorce. No alimony. Basically, it's as if it's sort of like alimony for your wife's lawyer. How much have you paid to Mark Shelma? Do you have any idea?
Over $1 million.
We're sitting here speechless. Over $1 million in attorney's fees total, or just $1 million to Shelma?
Attorney fees. It was interesting, in my first custody, in the first phase of this battle, my first attorney turned in his, he had to submit what his total bill was to me. And Mark Shelnut had never submitted his bills to me, had never submitted them to the court, and the judge, and he stood up and said, "Your Honor, he's had to pay his attorney this, so I'm owed the same amount." And the judge said, "I can't give you that amount, but I'll give you 50% of it." Without showing proof of billing. And mind you, now
that's pure redistribution, isn't it? Equal payments for the sake, equalizing payments merely for the sake of equalizing payments.
On top of that, this judge has actually told me, I've told her, I said, "You have put me in a position where I cannot protect any businesses that I have trying to refinance. I may lose them. You're going to force me into bankruptcy." And she said, "Go ahead, file bankruptcy, because bankruptcy can stop you from paying debts, but they cannot stop me from making you pay whatever I want you to pay in family court." And I'm like, so she basically has set it up where I'm going to soon be living on the streets. And I don't live a high and mighty life. I live in a very small home compared to what most of my colleagues live in. And I drive a smart car. So I'm not driving a massive vehicle.
True, the smart car is very small, but do you see where we're going with this? It is the destruction of a way of life. Todd is pretty much classic American middle class in every way. He believes he has to work hard to maintain his lifestyle. He's got a decent lifestyle, but basically he wanted to pass that on to his daughter. And everything that we're talking about here, from the horse riding to the scuba diving to the travel, it's about making sure that he cannot lead a life, even a semi-normal life. He cannot associate with his daughter in a normal way. He cannot go to her school. Right now he can't see her at all. He is not a father at the present time. And you know, anyone can look over this record and see that what he says is true. There are no actual allegations of child abuse. I mean, in other words, no one has ever even said anything serious about Todd, much less proven it.
The other thing of it is, and I want to make this clear, my wife at one time actually got a judge to issue a temporary thing to come in and confiscate my concealed weapons permit and guns, and they were all returned to me, and she was told if she ever did that again, she'd go to jail. But I want to make it very clear about something, about my upbringing. My parents were married to the day they died. My father was a career officer in the Marine Corps. And at the age of 42, he had 23 and a half years in the Marine Corps. I was 17 years old, and he went down and lost his ability to speak normally and was confined to a wheelchair and was retired 100% service-connected disabled. He was a highly decorated Marine. My mother and him were married till literally the day my dad died. And my mother died a few years thereafter. My dad died at 58. My mother died at 60. And I was very committed with my parents. And I grew up with a very, very close family, with my grandparents, my cousins, my uncles. And somehow or another, the mere fact that if you remember back when the World Trade Towers came crashing down. We went for 2 years there where we had all these lockdowns at the airports and you had to show up hours and hours in advance to get on a plane and all this. I had to go to court to take my daughter to my mother's funeral. And the judge actually looked at me and said, "You're only allowed this amount of time to attend your mother's funeral." And based on the travel restrictions on me, I either had to miss the viewing or miss the funeral. And luckily, some people stepped up and made arrangements. I was taking care of my 90-year-old grandmother, who was falling apart with the death of her only daughter. And luckily, I had friends of mine step up who, you know, had a plane, and they made arrangements to fly myself, my daughter, and my grandmother up so I could be at both sessions, the viewing and the funeral of my mother. And it just incredulates me that a judge doesn't respect your wishes to see your mother buried beside your father. And it just amazes me that there's no respect for family values of the way I was raised.
And that is what we mean by cultural warfare, class warfare, and a form of genocide.
So, Charles, can you give some background on the history of the family court system and when it was set up?
You know, I think that that would take us way off topic. I think that we should do that a different day. Let's just put it this way. The brief summary is that in England and throughout the European world, family court used to be regulated entirely by the church. And so when we're talking about things like the value of attending a funeral, for example, of maintaining the honor of our parents and grandparents, that is taught in the Bible. That is clear instructions in the Ten Commandments. Nothing could be more basic. And yes, I think that what we really need to understand is that in so many ways, everything that Todd is talking about here is a First Amendment issue, in that he's talking about how he wants to educate his daughter, how he wants her to develop, how he wants her to inherit his values and pass it on to her children. This is the goal of a family, is to pass on tradition. In the 200 years of U.S. history, nearly 250 years now, we have gone from marriage being entirely a church matter to being entirely a state matter. All the debate that you hear about gay marriage,
with the gay marriage thing, ironically, is both the pro-gay marriage and the anti-gay marriage side are taking the same stance, in the sense where they believe that government should regulate marriage. Both sides are taking that stance.
And of course, as I say, it also illustrates why do they say it's important. The reason they say it's important is because of the benefits, the financial benefits, regulated by law, whether these are private insurance or through the Federal Welfare Code, the benefits accruing to people through marriage are entirely to be regulated by the government. And that is the most intrusive aspect of all this, that basically a man like Dr. Overcash is being used as a puppet for redistribution of wealth. Would you disagree with that, Todd?
I wouldn't. I guess the one question I would have, and I would ask anyone out there, I understand if you literally live in a tent on the street, I think that's atrocious. I think that's horrible, and I think we should deal with those things. But if you're a reasonable person financially, tell me what mother or father would go to court to stop having braces put on a child for crossbite. We're not talking about cosmetic. We're talking about crossbite, where your teeth bite inappropriately and leads to permanent damage. If you don't treat it before the age of 13, it requires jaw surgery. What parent would go to court to block speech therapy? What parent would go to court to stop the treatment of a humpback, which is treatable? Tell me, man or woman, I would love anyone to tell me how you can justify that when you're putting the best interest of your child first. And then for the court to simply look at you and say, mother says it, we don't care what the doctors at Duke, University of Florida, Harvard, Cincinnati Children's Hospital says, We don't care what you say as a doctor. Doesn't matter. It's what the mother says. And I'm sitting here like, tell me how you can justify that.
Have they ever tried to threaten your medical license?
Yes, sir.
Better elaborate on that. I know very little about that story.
Basically, after I turned in a judge for the doctor shopping and getting 30 times a day day's allowance of medication.
Judge Swiger.
They came at me and said, well, Todd, you know, you have given these patients pain medications and we think that's inappropriate. Well, I'll give you an example. One of them is a retired police officer out of New Jersey who's had three back surgeries. He's 5'11" and weighs 125 pounds. And he's in so much pain he can't stand it. And he was seeing someone before I ever saw him. I kept him what he was on because all the MRIs, x-ray reports, op reports were confirmed. I no longer treat him. He's on the same pain medications I had him on. And yet I did something wrong. Another person was someone who had been injured and I got them off pain medications. But I didn't do it quick enough. So they came at me over that. And I'm sitting here like I'm somewhat amazed by the process of this thought process. And then there was another patient who, which I find very interesting in a country like this today. He was from Ireland. He had moved here to the United States, was a legal citizen. He was married to an Irish woman. They refused to allow his wife to enter the United States because of something in her family history. He was here. He had been injured multiple times. He was treated by the University of Florida hospital or the medical school there for chronic pain. Had had back surgery, was not a candidate for back surgery. They had him on pain medications. He didn't have a job. He was living off what little money he had and his family from Ireland could send him. He hired the law firm Bender and Bender in Tampa to get his disability. He hired another immigration attorney out of Gainesville to try and get his wife here to help look after him. All were denied. I said, look, the state's giving everybody, giving me a hard time, so I want you to go to another pain doctor. He went to another pain doctor. And, well, another doctor who took care of his pain, put him on the same medications I had, and that doctor finally looked at him and said, sir, you're in such bad shape, you have nowhere to live. I think the best thing we can do is put you in hospice. He was put in hospice and tanked out on medications, allowed to die in 9 months in a hospice house. And somehow or another, when I was taking care of him, he lived fine. And somehow or another, and this all started after I exposed judges' family and judges for illegal activity.
In other words, that too is basically punishing you as a whistleblower for your exercise, not only of your basic First Amendment rights, but your professional duties as well.
And what our federal government claims is our responsibility, which is to expose corruption and illegal activity.
But instead, basically, you're being destroyed for exposing
corruption. I've essentially been destroyed, and at this point in time, I truly do not believe that we do not have true constitutional rights as guaranteed anymore.
Is the problem more with the federal government or the courts or the family court systems on a state or county level, or both equally?
I think that it is, in some ways, quite equal. I think the family courts are definitely much more corrupt, and I think the feds have enabled that by having these kickback monies for doing these protective issues with children.
Through
the welfare system. I believe that. I think that what is interesting to me and is the most concerning to me, last week the Florida Supreme Court issued a ruling saying that caps, limits on liability, malpractice claims against doctors were unconstitutional. They were passed by the House and the Senate of Florida. They were signed by the governor. And the Florida Supreme Court said it's illegal. You can't cap damages because that's unfair to the citizens. Yet, the citizens are not allowed to hold our government agencies accountable because they have sovereign immunity. And I find that amazing. And then when you look at lawyers in the court system, the lawyers are disciplined by the Florida bar. Well, they're attorneys. Judges are disciplined by the JQC, which is a monitoring agency by judges, which can't act. All they can do is make recommendations. Then the Supreme Court decides. There has never, that I can find, an attorney reprimanded based on a citizen's complaint. It only occurs if a judge does it. And the other thing of it is, you think about this. If you commit a criminal activity, or if I get sued in malpractice, those records are always available and always there. But if you file a complaint against an attorney or a judge, they're only kept in the system for 1 year, and then they're disposed of, they're irrelevant. I have a real problem with that.
Well, the issue of attorney immunity is interesting because it's not, it's only a matter of practice. It's not even a matter of law. And judges, the judges have made rules to protect themselves, and yes, that's a major conflict of interest. But what's terribly interesting is that when you talk about the lawyers and how they are insulated from
it's only certain lawyers.
You're saying a distinction between a private practice lawyer and a government lawyer.
No. We're talking about the distinction between a lawyer who works with the system and against it. Todd has one set of issues here. As you know, I have another.
Let me break this down. I'll give you an example. If you play the game with the parties, whether you're a physician, an attorney, or an engineer, you get what you want. But the minute you stand up for what is right and fair and equal, you're not. I'll give you an example. I won't give you his name. He's a very senior attorney in Gainesville, Florida, who was in law school at the University of Florida. He had 50-50 custody of his child, and his ex-wife vanished down to Sarasota. He drove down every weekend to see his child. Every weekend he got arrested and put in jail for coming to see his child. He was refused a job working with the state attorney's office because he had, quote, been arrested. He was not able to see his son after the age of 14. At the age of 15, the child contacted him once. Now his son has moved to Gainesville and sees him once a week. He graduated law school at the University of Florida, and he is running to be a U.S. congressman and is challenging Congressman Yoho, who's out of Gainesville, to become a congressman.
This is kind of a little off topic, but Bill Maher has this thing of a congressman he wants to put out of office, and I know Yoho is one of the Congress Bill Maher has listed that he wants to get out of office, but he probably has different reasons for getting him out of office than the guy you're talking about.
I'm just saying that here is an example of an attorney who understands the law, but he is still arrested, even though he's honoring the law, simply because a woman says, I don't want him here.
Is he challenging Yoho in the Republican primary or the general election?
Primary.
Did he get in, or is it the primaries are...
I didn't hear the results because I'm not close to the family. I just met this attorney because I was somewhere and I happened to meet him, and I was talking about what I was going through with my daughter, and he said that he understood what I was going through, and he gave me a poem to carry with me.
We are kind of getting close to the end of the show, so I want to give both of you a chance to sort of summarize your feelings on these issues.
Well, I mean, I there's one thing, more thing that Todd probably should cover before we close, so I think you should cover that. You mentioned this attorney. How difficult has it been for you to get attorneys to stand up to these judges?
The attorneys here in Marion County will not represent me because they said that I have cut my throat by reporting illegal activity. And I have a list of over 10 attorneys who said that Marion County is so corrupt they will not come here and represent me. And they've told me that I basically should leave the area. And I've actually had now three attorneys tell me that I should forfeit my citizenship and leave the United States of America.
If that's not disruption of society, I don't know what is, but we'll have to probably have to continue this a different day, right, Robert?
Yes. So we're out of time, but I'd like to thank both of you, William Todd Overcash and Charles Lincoln, for being on.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, sir.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.